We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 17, and we're going to look at the first full section now of this passage. God is in the process of preparing the prophet Elijah for a huge event. That event is recorded a couple of chapters later in 19. And in chapter 19, the prophet Elijah by himself is going to have to take on 450 prophets of Baal, basically the entire government, the people of the northern 10 tribes. I mean, he is going to face one of the most difficult situations that any human being could possibly face in a lifetime. But Elijah's not going to be ready for that encounter until God has taught him, until God has trained him. And so the Lord is going to, and we'll find out over the next few weeks, take him through a series of difficult events in order to build him up, in order to strengthen the prophet so that he is ready for the great encounter on Mount Carmel when the time comes. The title of the message this morning is this: No Pain, No Gain is Not Just for Weightlifting. When I was in high school, I used to lift weights. I was a football player, and the coaches had us in the weight room basically at least three times a week. When I was entering my senior year, they asked us to come 3 days a week, even in the summer, even when we were off from school, and spend a couple hours with the coaches in the weight rooms and then doing running, basically for strength conditioning and endurance conditioning. And so I did that all summer. I never missed a day. I was always there. And I'll tell you what, in a hot weight room, you know, sometimes you don't really feel like going. And I don't know if you've ever lifted weights, but it hurts. It's painful. So we'd go and, you know, you'd lift in a number of different ways, not just bench press, but you'd work with your legs, you'd do all kinds of things. And the exercise that I liked the least was called the ram rack. And it was this large machine, and you'd step into it, and these pads would come down onto your shoulders, and then they would put all these weights on the front of the ram rack. And then they'd unleash this big chain. Okay, so they'd let it down and let it go, and then all the weight was resting on your shoulders, and there were a number of different things you could do with the platform, but the most basic one, you'd just kind of, you know, do a squat like this and come up. And every time I got done with that exercise, I couldn't hear. My ears would plug up, the actual tubes in my ear. There was so much stress on my body that my tubes in the ears would just plug up. So you get done with weightlifting and you get back to the locker room and you were so worn out that you couldn't really even get your shirt off to, you know, jump in the shower. It was excruciating. It really hurt. But what happened? All the pain that we went through in a given day was bad or good? It was very beneficial. What was happening? Well, I was actually tearing my muscles up. Anyone who lifts weights is actually tearing the muscles apart. You're ripping those muscles. Why? Because when the muscles heal, when they grow back within a couple of days, they grow back just a little bit stronger. Not a lot stronger. You're not going to go to a weight room and lift, you know, weights once. Of course, you'll be really sore after the first couple of times, and you get a little bit more used to it, and it's not quite as bad. But you're not going to be super strong after lifting just once or twice or even for 2 months. But if you lift weights for a year, go beyond that, your strength and your endurance will be magnified manyfold. Now, what I'm seeing as I read through the series of events in the life of Elijah is that God is not through a physical challenge to his body, but through a spiritual and emotional challenge to his soul, God is forcing the prophet Elijah to lift spiritual weights. He is putting him through very painful episodes, difficult episodes, at least they could have been painful, could have been difficult, in order to very slowly, over the process of 3.5 years, strengthen the prophet so that by the time he is ready to use him on Mount Carmel, Elijah will be ready. What will God bring us through to strengthen our faith? God took Elijah the prophet through many things in order to strengthen his faith. I wonder, what is God going to bring you and I through in order to strengthen our faith, in order to build us up through grace so that we might be better prepared to serve him in the future? God won't trust a baby Christian with a huge load. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13 says that he's not going to put a load upon us that we can't bear. God knows how much we can handle and won't put a greater load upon us. But God does want to build us up so that in the future we'll be able to bear more of a load, to be able to serve him more effectively. Where are we now in 1 Corinthians 17, 1 through 7? Well, we are at the very beginning of this passage in Jezreel. We are most likely in the king's throne room. And the prophet Elijah has just confronted Ahab. He said it won't rain for years, and then he walks out of the throne room. It's probably while he is walking that the Lord speaks verses 2 through 4 to the prophet. Let's read these verses. And the Lord, verse 2, the word of the Lord came to him and says, "Depart from here and turn eastward. Hide yourself by the brook Cherith, which is by the east, or rather, which is east of the Jordan. You shall drink from the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there." Where is God taking the prophet Elijah? As far as the location goes, no one is actually certain where the brook Cherith is. The Bible atlases that I have a bunch of them. The best ones place Cherith in the region of Gilead. If you remember from last week, that is where the prophet Elijah grew up. He grew up in the region of Gilead, which is not on Israel's side of the Jordan, but is on Jordan and Syria's side of the Jordan. So it's across the river. This would have been about 35 miles distant from the palace in Jezreel. So as the prophet is walking from the palace to the brook Cherith, God is speaking to him. And where is he going? Well, imagine being with the prophet Elijah and making this 35-mile trek. He's walking through a region that is somewhat green, but is also somewhat desertous, depending on where he's going. He's walking through some very rugged country. The hills are not small. They're rather large. And in some cases, there are some mountains there. He goes down fairly steeply to the Jordan, and then he fords someplace in the river. And he goes up into the brook Cherith. Now, in your mind's eye, what are you seeing? It's going to be important to understand where he is. He's going to be here for about a year. Commentators are agreed that the prophet Elijah spent about a year being prepared by the Lord at the brook Cherith. So where is this? Or what does it look like? It's in Gilead. And if you can imagine, in the region of Gilead, down at the Jordan River, one of the deepest places on the face of the earth, okay, when you look up toward the brook Cherith, you're basically going to be looking upward toward mountains. And these mountains are going to rise rapidly. If you were to walk straight up the bottom of the brook along the stream, it would wind and it would curve. Okay, on the hills on both sides, there's going to be limestone cliffs. They're going to be craggy and they're pockmarked with caves. There's going to be almost no vegetation. This is a really dry place. So there'll be almost no vegetation here. Yes, there'll be a small conifer that's trying to eke out a living, maybe hanging off the edge of a cliff here and there. Okay. There'll be down at the brook, there will be green. In fact, it'll be fairly green. There'll be some grasses, some small trees, and so forth. But all along the sides of the cliff, okay, there's very little. What kind of animals are going to be here? Two main kinds of animals. There'll be rock badgers that will be jumping around on the cliff, and then there'll be ravens. We're going to find out a little more about the ravens in a minute. So there won't be even very many animals there. Not very many types of birds are going to fly down in this place, nor will there be any large animals likely that he is to see during this year. Now, the stream, okay, most of the time is going to be a small, bubbling brook. It's not going to be very wide. It'll be about as wide as the aisle of our church here down the center. That's about it. And in some places, even narrower than that. There'll be a few pools here and there, but the water is never going to be deep. Maybe deep enough to take a bath in and a few, you know, pools, but otherwise it's going to be 6, 12 inches deep, something like that. So Elijah fords the river, and then he goes up into one of these crevices in the earth. And really, on both sides, okay, on the top is a tableland. And this crevice in the earth is impassable if you're walking on the top. You can't get over these brooks, these canyons. They're too steep. So the only way that you can get through is to go around, or you could actually walk right up the middle along the creek bed, and that's what Elijah does. Now, that place would have, at first, I think for Elijah, seemed intriguing and interesting. He probably hasn't spent time hanging out at the Brook Cherith before. Okay, you wouldn't go there normally or naturally. But after a short while, I don't think this is going to be a place where most of us, if any of us, would like to be. Elijah, interestingly, just goes. When God tells him to go to the Brook Cherith, you're going to be staying there, I'm going to be protecting you there, does Elijah say, Lord, there's not much there, there are no people, you know, how am I going to eat, you know, what are you going to do, ravens, that's an unclean bird, Lord, I don't know about this arrangement. In fact, I'd rather not. You know, we don't read anything like that. When God tells the prophet Elijah to go, we find that he simply obeys. I love that about the prophet. So this is the place where God sends him. But look at the provision that God gives him in verses 6 and 7. It says, the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. And after a while, the brook dried up because there was no rain in the land. I don't know what you would have done the first time when you got there, but if it was me, if Elijah's anything like I am, I would have gone and I would have found a nice-sized cave. There would have been lots of caves to choose from. All of them uninhabited. There aren't going to be any people living down here. Okay? No one walks down through Cherith. Not even kids that are, you know, out gallivanting around are going to go down this far and get this far away from their homes. Okay? So no one is coming through here. So he's got the pick of any one of the caves. I would imagine him picking out a cave that's basically just a little bit up on the side of the wall. Why? You know, because in case of a melt or a flash flood, you wouldn't have to worry. But I think probably Elijah's not even too worried about that because he knows it's not going to rain. So he picks out a cave. Maybe it's one that's just a little bit up, elevated from the creek, but has fairly easy access. He makes as much of a home out of it as he can. Maybe that takes a day or so. Gets a little conifer from the side of the cliff and sweeps it out and cleans it up a bit and tries to make a bit of a bed for himself, maybe finds some rocks for pillows and so forth. And then after all that, he probably takes his sandals off and he puts his feet in the creek and he enjoys his surroundings for a while. And the first night, maybe he's got his feet in the creek, what happens? Just as God said it would, ravens come down. And they provide, it says, bread and meat for him. Now, anytime I mention this text, I always joke that this was probably the first pepperoni pizza delivery in history. But I've actually changed my mind. I had Faye's Pizza over at the Duco's last night, and I think this was Faye's Taco Pizza. It was really good. Anyway, I don't know what it was exactly that God was bringing to the prophet Elijah, but when it says flesh, it just means meat. And ravens are carrion feeders, okay? So they won't take a bird that or a animal that has died maybe, many days old. They're not going to eat flesh that's been rotting for too long, but they will take dead animals, okay? Parts of the flesh of animals that have died recently. They'll also steal baby birds from other nests and so forth. So this is the type of meat that they would have provided for Elijah. And when it says bread, what are you thinking? What comes into your mind? I mean, when I think of bread, I'm thinking that, well, maybe they flew onto one of the outdoor ovens that the ladies make the bread for and picked off a piece and brought it. That's not what the word bread means. Bread is the Hebrew lechem, and what it means is basically just a general word for food. So included in the idea of bread would be berries, seeds, fruit. Okay, so there'd be a variety of things that would fit under this Hebrew word, but it probably doesn't actually mean bread, either in the flat type of leavened or unleavened bread that they bake in the Middle East, or certainly not the kind of loaf bread that we have. So these birds are bringing flesh from various kinds of animals to Elijah, and they are bringing berries and seeds and so forth to the prophet. One commentator said that the raven is partially a carrion feeder if offal or bodies are fresh. It also eats the young of other birds and very small animals and seeds and berries and fruit, having a varied diet as much as any bird. Now, don't think that this was somehow done naturally. This provision of meat and seed and berries and so forth was not natural. These ravens are not dropping these things out of the sky accidentally. Okay, they're not accidentally leaving a few leftovers. No, God commanded these ravens to bring this food to the prophet Elijah, and that's exactly what is happening here. So this is a supernatural thing. It is not a natural process. And by the way, these ravens, the only time that they're going to be carrying food is when they have young. Okay, so if they don't have young, they're not going to be carrying food back and forth and even with the possibility of dropping it. Okay, their young are hatched and eat this food for a matter of a few weeks, and then they're large enough to go out on their own. So Elijah being here for an entire year shows us that this was by in no means an accident. These birds even if they had young and even if they were dropping these things accidentally, would have already had a course of young and they wouldn't be doing this anymore. So I imagine the first time that these birds appeared to Elijah, he would have been intrigued, would have been thrilled, would have been excited. But imagine morning and evening, again and again and again, and pretty much the same food, not the types of things he's used to, certainly not baked things and well-cooked things and meals. This would have gotten old, I think, rather fast. So, the place, the provision, and now the lessons. One commentator said something like the following: often God has more than one purpose in mind when he gives directions to his servants. He desires to provide for their needs, but the specific way he meets them may be dictated by his desire to teach lessons as well. Why did God protect the prophet Elijah the way that he did and in the place that he did? I believe that God took Elijah to Cherith, out in the middle of nowhere, in a really difficult spot, in a place where there's no way that Elijah could take care of himself. God took him there to teach him some lessons. Lessons that he would need in the upcoming years, and lessons that he would need ultimately on Mount Carmel. Lessons that if he had not already learned, he wouldn't be prepared to do the things that God had him do. It reminds me of the benefit of weightlifting. You can't bench press 250 pounds unless you've been lifting for a while. You can't bench press 300 pounds unless you've been lifting longer. Slow, gradual growth. Slow, smaller trials probably at the beginning. Some larger trials as we are stronger. Maybe eventually some very deep, difficult trials. God would not bring them into our lives unless he knew we were capable of handling them. And by the way, we can't handle any trial apart from grace. What are the types of lessons that God was teaching the prophet Elijah by bringing him here to Cherith? The first one was the lesson of waiting. God was teaching the prophet Elijah to wait on him. Waiting is not an easy lesson. Nearly everyone desires action. And think of the prophet Elijah. Elijah was at home in the midst of daring situations. The temptation to do something must have been difficult. I mean, can you imagine sitting at the brook Cherith for an entire year? Maybe exploring a little bit up and down the brook, but not leaving this crevice in the earth for an entire year. At first, exploring the surroundings would have been fun, but what would have filled the long hours of every day, day in and day out, week after week, finally month after month? The cliff that would have been so interesting at first would have become like a prison wall. He could only hope and wait that God would somehow effect repentance on the part of his people. The lesson of waiting. Does God have you in wait mode in some way in your lives? For me, it's just a minor thing. It's not a big thing, but we're in wait mode right now. I don't want to be commuting from Pembine to Sheboygan every weekend. I'd much rather have my family here every single week and be down around and with you and just, you know, have the luxury of just taking a short drive to visit people and so forth. I'd much rather be down here right now. But God has us in wait mode, and we're not going to jump ahead. We're going to trust him and wait until my dad's able to get into the nursing home. So I feel like I'm in a little bit of a wait mode. And I want to do exactly what the prophet Elijah did. I want to obey God and trust him and not rush ahead and not try to force things and manipulate the situation and try and get it done. And no, I'm just going to wait and rest in him. And when we find a house, we find a house, and we're not going to rush. We don't have to rush. We're going to trust him and be patient. Is God teaching you this lesson? Are you willing to wait? What is God bringing us through in order to build our faith? The second lesson that God was bringing the prophet through is that of loneliness. The lesson of loneliness. God has made us fearfully and wonderfully, the psalmist says. He's all given us all a mind. A mind is a powerful thing, but our thoughts and our emotions, when you have to sit alone, when you are alone, when you emotionally feel lonely, those thoughts and those emotions, the beauty of the mind can become twisted. That which is fearfully and wonderfully made can become our worst enemy as we begin to have self-pity and our imaginations become evil. I mean, mankind cannot help but think. And where there's no object to focus on, something outside of ourselves to focus on, we tend to think only of ourselves. Put yourself in Elijah's sandals for a minute. Be stuck down at the brook Cherith. Be stuck in that cave for a while. Here's a man of action. Here's a man who's never been by himself for a long period of time. Place yourself there. How would you do? How would you fare? None of us are in a situation exactly like Elijah was in. Not a one of us are without some family. Maybe it's extended, but some family. None of us are without a church and some fellowship. But is it not true that even if you're married and you know, you're in the same house with your family every day, that there can still be a sense of loneliness? Is God bringing you through a time right now where you feel lonely? Are you caving in to self-pity? Are you struggling in your heart with complaining? How easy would it have been for Elijah to complain to God right now? We see not a hint of complaint. It's not like the Israelites when they were coming out of Egypt in the wilderness for 40 years. I mean, they are complaining repeatedly. Oh, Moses, why did you bring us out here? If we could just go back to Egypt where it was so nice and so good. Yeah, right. It wasn't nice and it wasn't good. Complain, gripe, mumble. Could you imagine being Moses in that day? But you know what? God doesn't have to put up with a prophet who's complaining. Stupid birds. Ravens are unclean animals. And I can't even eat the rock badgers. They're unclean too. God, why did you bring me here? I'm sick of being stuck out. We don't hear any of that. There's no indication, whatever. Oh, I could have stayed in an inn somewhere. Lord, why did you bring me here? No. He stays there quietly, faithfully in prayer. And I think he turns loneliness into a relationship. It's easy to build relationships with people. Is it so easy to build a relationship with a God that we cannot see and who we only hear through his word? Not so easy. No complaints from Elijah. And there also doesn't appear to be any doubt in his mind. Man, when the Israelites are wandering through Egypt, they're doubting all the time. They're worried about being thirsty. Where's the water? How are we going to survive? They're worried about being hungry. And of course, God brings manna and later he brings the quail and so forth. They're doubting God repeatedly. Not Elijah. Do you struggle with loneliness? Are you complaining in your heart? Is there doubt about what God is doing in your life and where he has you right now? How can we gain victory over complaint and doubt? In Isaiah chapter 26 and verse 3, we read, "You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you." If you are in a situation right now where God is causing you to wait, or where you are suffering from loneliness, take Isaiah chapter 26, verse 3, and memorize it. I'll read it one more time. "You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you." Focus on God. Learn the lesson the way that Elijah did. Focus on the Lord. He is sufficient. The third lesson that Elijah was learning here is the lesson of trusting God for daily provision. That lesson that we face whenever there is a time of need. Elijah could in no way supply for himself. There are no fish in the brook Cherith. The stream is way too steep to allow for there to be fish. He cannot fish. He cannot eat the ravens. And he cannot eat the rock badgers. There aren't animals for him to hunt or to trap. There's nothing for him to eat. He must trust God for his daily sustenance. Men, are we willing to trust God to provide for us, for our wives, and for our children? It's one thing to look at Elijah's life. It's one thing to get up here and talk about it. You know, I mean, I'm the man that God's chosen this morning to communicate his word to you. I can get up here and talk all I want. It's one thing to say these things. It's another to live these things, to live this way. I'm preaching to myself. Am I willing to trust God when things are not going so well financially, when things are difficult? To me, living day by day and trusting God for physical provision for me and my family in a day-to-day situation seems downright scary. I'm not quite sure what I would do if there was zero money in the bank and we were living so tight that, I mean, every single dollar counted each month. I'm not exactly sure how I would handle it. I would pray that I would be strong enough to trust the Lord in that situation and not to worry and to believe that God would provide. So, men, how about you? Ladies, do you trust God this way? I mean, what is this? Give me my daily bread stuff. It's more like, give me a large bank account and a 401k and, you know, nice home and a couple of cars that run well. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, you know. No. Maybe so, but maybe not. Are we learning maybe? Are you maybe learning this lesson of trusting God for daily provision right now? But the last lesson that Elijah is going to learn here is even more difficult, and I think it's the greatest of all of these lessons. I mean, there is the lesson of waiting. There's the lesson of loneliness. There's the lesson of need. Each one of these is kind of like lifting weights. In each one of these, God is slowly strengthening the prophet Elijah. It's not just the first day that God provides for Elijah, and the second day, it's every single day for approximately a year that has to strengthen his faith over that course of time. But there is a looming crisis. And what is it? I mean, we're told in the last verse, after a while, the brook dried up because there was no rain in the land. I would have loved to have been a meteorologist in this day. It would have been easy. I can pretty much guarantee you there's a 100% chance of sunshine tomorrow. In fact, the five-day forecast is sunny every day. None of this 50% chance, you know, giving yourself a little bit of leeway. No, I mean, 100% chance every day. And Elijah knows it's not going to rain. And so at first, as the brook Cherith starts to dwindle, that's got to be an encouraging sign for him. But it's getting smaller and smaller. And the stream that was as large as the aisle in the middle of our church is now narrowing in half and then a quarter. Pretty soon, there is almost no water that's going over the next little hump in the stream bed. And then eventually, the water stops altogether. And all that's left are a few pools up and down this little stream bed. And within days, almost all of those pools are, I mean, it's extremely hot in this region. It's really hot here. It's basically desert. Okay, so, I mean, those pools are mostly dried up within a couple of days. When it says in verse 7 that the brook dried up, the word dried is yabhash, and it means just that, completely dry, no dew, no moisture, no water flowing. If you're Elijah and you haven't heard from God for a long time, I don't think God was talking to Elijah every day. I'm sure Elijah was talking to the Lord in prayer, but he's not hearing from God. It's like Moses. Periodically, God speaks to the prophet, but not regularly. So he has probably been here for about a year and not heard from the Lord. So as the stream begins to dry up, he's got to be wondering, Lord, you know, tapping his finger on the rock. Hello, are you out there? Are you going to tell me what the next step is? I'm waiting. There's almost nothing left to drink, and it's getting pretty stagnant. I mean, it's at that time, I would say a time of crisis, that God finally speaks to him again and tells him the next step. What is the next step going to be? Verses 8 and 9. And when the Lord came to him, he says, arise, go to Zarephath. I mean, we're going to find out next week. That is not good news. That's the last place that Elijah wants to go. And that's enemy territory, folks. So we'll talk about that next week. So, you know, he's waiting here. He's waiting. And when he finally does get news, it's not really good news. Are we able to trust God in a time of crisis? Let's make it very personal. Are you able to trust God through crisis? Crises come in many different forms. They come in the form of physical trials, our physical health. They come in terms of financial trials. They come in terms of relational trials, difficulties with people. Maybe your boss. It may be a coworker or an employee. It might be your spouse. It might be one of your children. What kinds of crises has perhaps God brought you into? What is God trying to do in you, through you, by placing you in a Cherith-like experience? Is it waiting? Is it loneliness? Is it need? Is it crisis? When a trial comes, the only way that we will be able to make it through is by grace. What will God bring us through to build our faith? Why is he bringing us through trials? To strengthen us. Yeah, that's obvious, but what kind of trials will he bring us through? I don't know. I don't know what kind of trial he'll bring me through or you through in the next year. But one thing we can know is that he is doing that for the purpose of preparing us for the future. For the future and for greater service. Sometimes, and with this we conclude, sometimes when we're brought through a time of need or crisis, we don't respond well. I'm 46 years old. I've seen a lot of situations, and I've observed a lot of people, including myself. And to be honest with you, I've seen a lot of people cave. I've seen a lot of people pack and run. I've seen people make really bad decisions, decisions that they later regretted. I think that they were ready for that situation. I don't believe God would have brought them into such a situation unless they were prepared to handle it. But they didn't respond properly when placed in the grinder. I've seen, by the grace of God, the majority of people handle difficult situations well. I've seen people being diagnosed with stage 4 or stage 5 cancer and wasting away very quickly, leaving a husband or a wife and children. I mean, I've watched that happen and seen the remaining spouse and the spouse with the cancer be incredibly strong, amazingly strong by God's grace. And I wonder, how do they do that? And I've watched as the husband with cancer made videos for his children and for when some of them were smaller and when they got older and trying to disciple his children as he's dying, knowing that he's just got weeks or months. And marvel at really the strength of God evidenced in his life. You know, most believers make it through well. Some of them cave in and give up or give in. My prayer for us is this, that when, it's not a matter of if, that when God brings believers in our church through times of need, times of crisis, that they will handle things well because they've experienced them vicariously through the life of Elijah. Let's pray. Our Father, as we come before you now, as we bow our heads before you and your presence, we know that you are a mighty God, that you are a powerful God who has created us, you've bought us with a price, and you love us. You have not brought us to the point where we are to mock us if we are in time of difficulty. You have not pressed us and made our lives difficult to laugh. No, you have brought us here to strengthen us. Would you help us to rely upon you during times of stress and trial? Would you help us to find your grace through the fellowship of the saints in prayer, but especially as we study your word? Lord, may we respond like Elijah. May we, because of Christ, through the power of the Spirit, trust you regardless of the difficulties you bring us through. We know that you're growing us, that you're refining us, as you do, like a metal refiner takes gold through the fire to burn out all the dross. Burn the dross out in our lives, Lord, that we might be purified for your benefit. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.